the internet, and welcome to season 31, episode 3 of Daily Zeitgeist! For May 17th, 2018, my name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. I'm Jack O'Brien. Opened up my eyes, I'm Jack O'Brien. That is a throwback to Mondays, a.k.a. from John Constantine. I had to go back because I brought up the fact that Ace of Base used to be a Nazi band. And I forgot to shout out Adam Todd Brown, A.T. Breezy from Cracked, and the Unpopular Opinion Podcast Network now. That was from one of his columns. It was totally his observation. He was actually watching a Nazi documentary, heard Bass of Aces, and was like, wouldn't it be weird if the band was named after a Nazi bass? And from there, the mystery unraveled. That's had to shout that out. And I am thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
Straight out of L.A., y'all, we drop hits. Now tell me, how zesty can you get all the way from the hood to your nigga the hood's rip? One thing for sure,
Miles be good.
Thank you so much, Anna Claire Hodge, for that, a.k.a. because I like old Jay-Z songs, and if you've listened to Culture Kings, I peed myself at a Jay-Z show because I did not want to leave the front of the stage. So thank you for connecting that. It's feeling good on this Throwback Thursday.
That's a crazy story, but I've heard it, so I'm just going to move on.
Well, I talk about it pretty much every time a Jay-Z song comes on.
Yeah, it's clearly an important moment for you.
Seminal moment.
Yeah, a urinal moment for you. It kind of gave you, you were like, I feel like you learned a lot about who you are when you decided to pee instead of go to the back of the crowd.
My raison d'être.
We are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by the hilarious performer and artist behind Bad Comics. She is Anna Salinas.
Hi, guys.
What's
up? Oh,
so excited. I gotta be honest, ever since Edgar was on and talked some mad shit about me, I've just been burning up with anticipation.
Oh, yeah.
Now, for first-time listeners, who is Edgar?
Edgar Montplaisir is a comedian. He's also my boyfriend, and we have kind of an ongoing Twitter feud right now, which usually involves me dragging him or revealing personal details about his life, which I intend to do today.
Oh, wow. So maybe stick around for that secret at the end of the show, maybe.
Yeah.
Or unless you want to drop a bomb right now.
Oh, no, I'm going to hold on to it.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah. No, let him know.
Anna, what is something from your search history that is revealing about who you
are? Oh, actually, yeah. So I recently Googled, is it okay to put garlic up your butt?
Uh-huh.
Because Edgar revealed to me that the first time we hooked up, I forgot the details are so personal.
No, you didn't.
I mean, I hadn't recounted it in my head yet.
Uh-huh.
He had a hemorrhoid, and he was Googling like homeopathic remedies, and one of them is to put garlic up. So he did that, and I didn't know that, and I guess he didn't want to hook up like the next time we hung out or something. This is months ago, but and I didn't understand why at the time. I thought he was being so weird, and now I know it's because he literally had lodged a clove of garlic
up his
rectum. Yeah.
As you guys were hanging out for the second time, a clove of garlic up his ass.
That's crazy.
That's love.
But also, like, what would he have done if we did and it smelled like garlic? Because that's apparently part of it. But I Googled it. And
it's actually not a remedy.
No, it's very, very dangerous.
It's just a very specific sexual fetish.
Well, there are articles on the internet that are like, it helps. It helps with yeast infections as well for women, but the medical consensus on the internet is don't do it. You could get a very bad infection.
Yeah.
Oh, right, because you're like some weird agricultural product.
Yeah, you're putting a foreign object in your butt that is also an organic object.
Mm.
By the way, one of the most common things that emergency medicine sees is just foreign objects in people's butts. Always.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Huh.
As the spouse of a doctor.
Wasn't Sharla Lauriston talking about how like the Haitian remedy to everything was garlic?
Remember
what
she was
talking about?
That makes a little more sense.
Yeah, because she was like, I had a sty in my eye. I was rubbing garlic on it.
What? She was rubbing garlic on her eye?
Or like on her eyelid. Okay. And like apparently that works.
That's
so I'm thinking,
funny,
I wonder if he called his mother. And she
we
was
are
like,
learning so much about Haitians
now.
Yeah,
and his parents both work in medicine, so
Shit.
Maybe
Nah, his mom would be probably trip if she found out throwing up a little
That's crazy. She would have thought it was sexual and been like very outraged. What are you doing?
What is something you think is overrated besides putting garlic up your butt?
Yeah, I think the New York Times is a little overrated right now.
We're going to get to that.
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of friends who have been telling me for a while, like, you know, the columns on the New York Times can be pretty whack.
Yeah.
Which is true, and I've always sort of defended the New York Times.
Right.
So I'm
instead,
like, no,
you're like,
yeah,
check
there's
out the
hard-hitting
Daily Caller.
Journalism. Yeah, check out the Daily Caller. That's good journalism.
Stormfront's pretty tight.
Yeah. Right. But I recently realized that I have to come to terms with the fact that maybe the New York Times isn't all that great because they've been trying to do these really millennial stories, but they're really bombing. And I screenshotted a few of them because they're ridiculous and I want to read them.
This is from like their op-ed columns, you're saying?
This is from their like living section, lifestyle section.
Living section.
Okay, here's one. Why work when you can procrastinate?
Wait,
procrastinating through baking the practice of baking something unnecessary.
So that's like they're doing this thing that you see on the internet where you just rewrite the titles for your articles in like a fun, like sassy gal kind of way, like your sassy friend. It's like, why work when you can procrastinate?
Yeah, and it's stupid.
Like, you're the fucking New York Times.
That's an editor's
pick. Have some self-respect. Yeah.
That's an editor's pick story.
That's like year one BuzzFeed type shit.
Exactly. Yeah. So everybody just remade their headline writing with BuzzFeed staff, I think.
Right.
Yeah. We don't need you for that. We need you for like the real foreign wars journalism. Yeah. Okay. Here's another one. Why am I crying all the time?
I don't know. Why are you crying all the time? Is that a thing?
That's the headline.
Okay. I thought that was just something you said.
No. I mean, I did relate to it on some level.
And what was the story about? Was it a story? Is it a scientific explanation about
It's about how
emotions?
The internet is like evoking crying a lot, like through Kickstarter videos and like viral homecoming videos, like with the veteran homecoming stuff.
Okay.
Okay, and then the last one I'll say. Camembert without raw milk? Some cry treason.
Mm.
That's a stupid story.
Wow, that's such a specific thing to be outraged about.
Like cheese? That's bougie. That's
wait.
Also...
I didn't even know that was like you had to use raw milk to make camembert cheese.
I don't know. I mean, I love cheese. If anyone was gonna read that story, it was me. And did I stop and look because cheese was in the title? Yeah, but grow up, New York Times.
Right.
I'm over it.
Yeah, I can see the cheese thing. That feels like I could have seen that maybe in the 2000s in the lifestyle section.
I don't want to bombard
your
podcast.
Why am I crying all the time is so like millennial. Like,
well, it's probably like, someone just found out. They're like, wait, there's like even subreddits devoted to like videos that will make you cry. Like, interesting. So we can frame this as, why are we crying all the time? Well, folks, this thing called the internet has found ways to package these emotional moments into video. It's like, okay, all right.
It's stupid.
Yeah, I love it. What is something that's underrated?
I think that this is sort of abstract. I think the idea of female genius is underrated.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, I think like especially with This Is America, we, even as liberals, even as young people, have still this subconscious bias that only men can truly be geniuses. And I think it plays out a little bit. Ugh, go with me on this. Right now in hip hop, we have like the pinnacle of contemporary rap genius in Kendrick Lamar. Lil Tay. But like Kendrick Lamar and like Still Jay-Z and Childish Gambino. And I feel like on the other side of like successful breakthrough female rappers, we don't have much. I mean, Cardi B obviously, I feel like is the biggest contender. And I don't think that people take her as seriously as Kendrick Lamar or whatever.
That's such a good point.
That's for maybe good reason. I mean, she's not super overtly political. She's not making really clear political statements in her rap. But I think that filtering process of who we let break through is also something that plays into that. Like,
I think her genius is the fact that she is so consistently putting out hit records.
Yeah.
So I think on one level, people will try and put it through a filter of like, well, what is the context? Like, what is the content of the words or whatever? And like, is this person breaking down like societal inequality and shit like that? And Cardi B is also, her genius is in that she is sincerely herself. And that is already resonating with people for the fact that they're like, this is genuine, it's sincere, and it's a fucking, they're turn up songs. So that's,
but
you
I mean,
have
people
to count that into like, that is part of her success and that is her genius, I think, is to be so true to what it is that makes her herself and not, just being, I don't know.
It's like we as a culture have allowed that, okay, someone who used to be a 13-year-old drug dealer can be a genius. We accepted that. Like, great, that's true. That's very fair. Like, yes, Jay-Z, like, this is valid. You're still a genius. But I don't think we as a culture have accepted that someone who used to be a stripper can be truly a genius.
I agree, totally. Yeah, there's, yeah, first of all, on the subject of, like, the content of the lyrics, I mean, people were saying that Migos was, like, were geniuses, like, 3 years ago. And, you know, I think Cardi B, like, for instance, she dropped her first album, and I remember this New Yorker article that was hailing it as a great album talked about how hard she had to work to, like, understand hip-hop's conventions and, like, how to write the lyrics, like, that she had, like, really studied
hip-hop. She really did, yeah, because it was, like, a thing she had done casually, and someone was like, you could be a rapper, and because she's actually a very hard-working person, was like, let me really understand the form.
But it puts emphasis on like it being an effortful thing as opposed to her just being like going from stripper to just being like one of the best rappers. Like, she never has a misplaced word. Like, she is really one of the great, like, she writes great raps, and people, like, I feel like you're right that if that was a man, people would just be like, look how quick he picked this up, as opposed to, you know, like,
look how hard
he worked to like try and understand this.
I mean, with Cardi, I think it's because it's so different, is that everybody in the, if we're specifically looking in the context of hip hop, it's about your lyricism and shit like that. Mm. And that's what the sort of rubric that they're using to determine whether or not someone has this genius.
Although with like Lil Wayne, so much of that, I think, was about his wordplay and his flow. And
But I mean, like, lyrically, like, what is being said, like, like, that's how what they parse through. They're like, oh, you got that latex, but then he's talking about latex condoms. Like, whoa, what the fuck? Like,
And
Cardi's, her wordplay isn't that crazy or next level, but I think what it is it's, like, energetic. It's the energy. There's something that even goes beyond what's lyrically there, because, I mean, to be perfectly honest, none of the shit that she's writing is like, whoa, lyrically it's on another level.
You're right.
Because
and
the strength isn't about the
lyricism
with her. She can create an energy, a theme, an aesthetic around a track that connects with somebody. And now everybody's like, oh, they got the bloody shoes or they got the money bag or whatever.
Right.
That's that's where the genius is, because now you can't get that shit out of your head. No one, you know, not many people go back and they're like, yo, remember Deep Cover 98, dead in the middle of little did we know that we riddled some middleman who didn't do, like, you know, that's like shit for like heads, you know, like real hip hop heads. And meanwhile, look at Cardi's fucking numbers. She's like, she's putting up fucking numbers crazier than most artists, male or female, in hip hop.
Yeah.
And I think that's really where you can see it too. You don't have to parse through the lyrics. This is clearly connecting with people. People like it.
But I do feel like, I just feel like you're right that it's a word we just don't apply to women as easily as we will apply it to men. And whether her genius is like reading the zeitgeist or, you know, actually, like, you know, her rhyme writing, it just feels like a thing that you have to go above and beyond to have that word applied to you.
Yeah.
That's a great underrated. What is something that's a myth?
I think that it is, okay, this is something that came up in conversation recently. Literally last night, I was talking to some male friends, and the question was, do women actually like giving blowjobs? Do women actually like it when you come on their face?
Mm.
Like, I always feel so bad. A guy was saying this.
Yeah.
And I just feel...
You feel so bad, why are you doing it?
It's this weird way we talk about sex that, like, erases consent culture, where like sometimes, how do I say this, within a consenting adult sexual relationship, like a bit of degradation, like, is okay and can be something someone wants.
Right.
And it's sort of like this weird patriarchal, man, I've been so feminist this morning.
I know.
We're all impressed. Yeah, so like, know. Like women are doing men a favor when they do those kinds of sexual acts.
Yeah, it definitely puts it from the male perspective.
Right.
If you're like, is she, like, this is probably like not her favorite thing or something, as opposed to, yeah, this is a thing that's happening.
Yeah.
In the moment. And it's also like a, I don't know, yeah, like, you can you say broadly, like, how women feel about a given sex act, like,
absolutely
across the board?
Not.
It's, like, impossible. Yeah.
And I'm in this. Oh, man, I can't really say much about this because we're, like, sworn to secrecy. But I'm in this sex-positive women's and non-binary Facebook group right now.
Oh, cool.
That's maybe, like, 1,000 people plus. And it is mind-blowing how sex-positive everyone is. Like, there's all these conversations about, hey, looking for a third in my relationship. Like, we're just looking for, the term is unicorn. And, like, a post like that will get hundreds of comments with people being like, yeah, I'm interested too. Oh, I'm interested too. Like, lots of threads about anal sex. And seeing that, I realized, oh, wow, there is such an extreme degree to which we don't normalize kink.
Oh, yeah, a lot of kink shaming, yeah.
Yeah, that, and I just seeing, like, how every guy was like, yeah, girls don't like it when you come on their face. Man,
right.
Saying that out loud.
Because I surely wouldn't want to be cummed on my face.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, exactly.
I'm just not in the facial thing because it just feels, I don't know. The idea of masturbating at the end of sex to have an achieve an orgasm when you're having sex with a human consenting partner right. feels like a wasted opportunity.
Right. I see you that, and I raise you this.
Yes.
If the focus of your sexual encounter is female pleasure, and the woman has finished, and you've brought her to climax maybe a few times, it might be a nice finish for the man to masturbate and for the woman to be like done.
Oh,
with
I've never satisfied a woman.
Yeah, man,
wait, you said multiple orgasms?
Yeah, I think that should be.
That's not
this is witchcraft.
A running goal.
Miles, don't worry, it's not possible.
Yeah,
yeah. I actually, the myth I have is that women can orgasm. It's not true; they can't.
Wait, what?
No.
Knew it. Yeah. Knew it.
Yo, I have a couple phone calls I need to make.
Exactly.
All right, guys. Let's get into what people are thinking and talking about today. And carrying over from yesterday, the zeitgeist is still being dominated by the great debate of our time, Laurel v. Yanni, or Yanny. So,
the new Roe versus Wade.
Right. So we... played the clip for you guys yesterday. The New York Times actually created a great tool for listening to this and hearing it from
both
perspectives.
Sides. Yeah, like the New York Times does.
Right.
You know what I mean? Enabling a good conversation from both sides.
They
just be balanced.
Always want both sides heard.
Yeah, this is for the Yanni
as we'll
people.
Talk about later. But so we're going to play it for you kind of. It's basically a continuum on, like, the pitch continuum, because basically the lower you pitch it, the easier it is to hear Laurel. The higher you pitch it, the easier it is to hear Yanni. I will say that I feel vindicated, because when you listen to it from, like, going in one direction, you, like, when you start at the Yanni, the high pitch extreme, and go in the other direction, I hear Yanni basically the whole way until I get to the very end. And then on the Laurel side, if I start at Laurel and go in the other direction, I hear Laurel almost the whole way. So it really is, like, basically where you're coming from, like, what your memory is bringing to each individual hearing experience. But on yesterday's episode, basically everybody in the room was like, yeah, it's Laurel. It's obviously Laurel. People are crazy for who. And now I've encountered lots of people, Anna, mm-hmm. you are one of them, who only hears Yanni. And
is it Yanni or Yanni?
Yanni. It is Yanni.
You're hearing Yanni, like
high-pitched
Danny.
Yanni.
Yeah. And okay. I've heard from a lot of people who think that the Laurel folks are fucking with them. I can assure you that's not the case. But first, let's hear this. Let's hear this example that the New York Times created.
Laurel. Laurel.
So this is in the middle.
Laurel.
And you hear Yanni.
Laurel. Laurel. Laurel.
Still hear
Laurel.
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 You
And then it just goes all the way.
I hear now.
So this is Yami.
Yami. Yami.
I hear you.
Yami.
Whoa. Yami.
No. There, it just switched back over to me.
To Laurel.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It goes from Yami to Laurel.
It switched like four ago for me.
Okay.
I wonder if it really is a frequency kind of thing, huh? Because there's so much information stored in those higher frequencies that, like, I think that Nick Stumpf, super producer, and I played in bands, and I feel like you lose a lot of that higher end too from playing, that like I can't hear a lot of higher frequency stuff.
Oh.
And I wonder if that kind of puts me at a disadvantage because I'm not, a lot of those frequencies aren't in my hearing, like in my sonic range.
Could yeah.
Be. Yeah. I heard
until it's
Yanny
super pitched
in the beginning.
You heard Yanny all the way from the beginning.
I heard Yanny all the way until all of a sudden when I think we both have nodded to each other and it went Laurel.
And went Goebbels.
And then I heard Yaley as it was scaling up.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
I heard Hardy, to quote a joke from super producer Anna Hosniak, Laurel and Hardy. Bang.
Thanks for explaining
count
that
it,
one.
Swish. But yeah, I do think it has to do with, we think that we're hearing with our sensory organs and seeing with our sensory organs, and it's actually like a huge interaction between our memory and like our brain and how it's storing information and what our expectations are going into it, that like kind of completely determines how we hear and see
I believe
things.
That like I have one of those names, like your lovely producer, my name is Anna.
Mm-hmm.
And I whenever people say mom, I hear my name,
right?
And mama, of course. I feel like a lot of people hear their name with certain words, or people that have those like vowel heavy names.
So whenever you hear mama, you hear your name.
Yeah. Oh, hardcore. Wow. Yeah. I used to teach kindergarten, and they would say mama a lot, and I would hear my name.
Mm.
They would just say that like,
are you just trying to get your kids back?
Mom? As their moms were dropping them off or something?
Yeah, yeah. Or when
or
they
were
like
you just
crying.
Like so mean to them that they're like, Mom, oh my God.
My name is Anna.
Yeah, yeah. I was so mean to them that I reduced them to tears.
You're like, look
and
at
honestly,
this macaroni necklace bullshit.
Yeah. It was like Giovanni Ribisi's character in Saving Private Ryan when he's dying and he's like, Mama.
My liver.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Very, very hard scene to watch.
Very hard scene
I
to watch.
I showed it to them every day.
The opening scene from Private Ryan.
Yeah,
you're like,
yeah.
Do you know what happened on Omaha Beach Dog Green Sector?
Yeah. And if they didn't like it, then they could leave the class.
Forget Juneau and Sword Beach. It was all about Omaha, guys. And that's what we're talking about.
Exactly.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back, and you guys missed an amazing display of just accent perfection.
Flexibility.
From super producer Anna Hosnier, just crushing it as always. Like I've said, she and Leonardo DiCaprio have the two best South African accents I've ever heard imitated. It's just that she is trying to do an Australian accent when she does her South African
and it's
accent.
Impeccable, oh. South
impeccable
African.
South African. All right. So while we're talking about how the brain works, I wanted to give a quick shout out to
your best friend,
a guy named LeBron James.
Oh.
I think is how it's pronounced. So he, after just getting his ass dragged by the Celtics in game one, had a press conference where somebody asked him what happened at the beginning of the fourth quarter because there was a big shift in momentum. And here, we're going to listen to his response.
We ran him the first possession. We ran him down all the way to 2 on the shot clock. Marcus Morris missed a jump shot, followed it up. They got a dunk. We came back down. We ran a set for Jordan Clarkson, and he came off and missed it. They rebounded it. And we came back on the defensive end and we got a stop. They took it out on the sideline. Jason Tatum took the ball out, threw it to Marcus Smart in the short corner. He made a three. We come back down, missed another shot. And then Tatum came down and went 94 feet, did a Euro step, and made a right-hand layup timeout.
Wow, that was the most boring but accurate.
There you go.
Right.
Like retelling of a basketball game I've ever heard.
Right. But I think it's so just to put that in perspective, there are probably, I think, 140 something possessions in any NBA basketball
right.
game. They just asked him what like to talk about the ones that happened at the beginning of the fourth quarter, and he remembered them in detail. And that just reminded me of, it's basically my favorite experiment that's been done with memory, where they showed chess grandmasters chess boards with like various formations of the pieces. And they basically had photographic memories. Like they could just look at it and then, you know, close their eyes and they could
tell you exactly where
everything was on the board, like no matter what, until they tried it again, where they put the pieces in positions that they couldn't actually be in a chess game. Chess game, as it's called. And they couldn't remember it.
Right, because it's so chaotic, they couldn't actually relate that to.
Right. It's like, so I don't know. It's just interesting. It's like, speaks to how we remember things and like how, you know, procedural our memory is. Like, it has to be part of a story that we're telling ourselves, and it has to like make sense in the flow of events. And
it's also the roteness of basketball for LeBron James. Like, if you... Oh, I wonder. Maybe this isn't true. If I do an improv scene, I can tell you every beat of that improv scene.
Exactly.
Because I've done a billion of them to my great not fortunate. It's unfortunate that I've done them.
I think it is. You're pretty smart and witty, right? That didn't add anything?
That was my other overrated. I was going to say improv comedy. And I was like, no, I'll make too many enemies.
Right.
But maybe, yeah. So I don't know. Like, just for him... it's all stored there because what he's actually doing is so, so practiced.
Yeah. Right. No, I think it's probably more meaningful to him than to other people. And also in the same way that an improv scene, if somebody who doesn't give a shit about improv goes to an improv show and they're just like there to laugh, they're going to remember like two moments, but you remember every beat because you're in it, and it's very meaningful.
Well, it's all about how much of the matrix you can see in a given situation.
Absolutely.
Right, you know what I mean? Like in improv, of course you're going to see the matrix because you have to know, oh, okay, well, this is the choice this person made, how can I build on that or not. You'll also remember when someone makes a shitty choice, cause you're like, bro, you had a fucking opportunity to take
you
this scene
up
somewhere and you just fucked it up.
Right.
And same with, especially with basketball, like, you know, that's, you have to see the Matrix, especially for LeBron James, who probably at this point has 700,000 hours in basketball, is fully seeing the Matrix.
Exactly.
I'm trying to think of what's something that I could do. I don't know. Maybe a game of FIFA 18.
Sure.
I could probably remember, oh, you know what? Missed pass there.
I was going to suggest your podcast.
No, man, we do this so much.
Yeah.
We oftentimes are like, what? Did we talk about, did I say that? Although when I've listened to like episodes back, I kind of, I'm back in there and I'm feeling like, oh, this, I might say something here. Jackson, say
it just
this.
All runs together a little bit.
So I don't know if we're the best examples. We have brains.
But I definitely remember jokes that I've heard that are like good jokes. And I remember like movie plots like in detail and movie lines in detail and where I saw every movie that I've seen. Like that's, for me, like, uselessly, it's just like watching movies. I remember everything about
them.
You're
the LeBron James of watching movies.
Of watching movies.
I just remember. Oh, I remember most of my friends' old, like, hard-lined telephone numbers from when back when I was a youngster. We didn't have cell phones, so I had to dial people's phone numbers.
Right.
And I have all those phone numbers.
That's
that
impressive.
That shit was important.
Yeah.
We didn't have social media.
Mine are gone. The only phone number I know is my home phone number, which has since been disconnected.
Yeah. Right. Sometimes it was crazy. Even like as I, you know, as I became more reliant on the cell phone, even with people I would date who you typically are calling all the time, I realized I didn't even know their numbers.
Yeah.
Half the times.
Which is crazy.
You just store it and you just tap a button rather than like, oh, is that, I could see the number. Like, is that your number?
I know area codes.
But like people who are memory like champions who like they actually have competitions where they'll like put 30 decks of cards and then just like flip them over and you have to memorize exactly what order they were in.
Right.
Those people like say that the way that they do that is by telling themselves a story.
Right.
And so it kind of ties to that. Like you are basically putting it in the flow of
like the memory palace,
story.
Right?
Yeah.
Is what they call it.
Mnemonic device, kind of.
Yeah. Because I remember when I was talking with a guy who counts cards, that's exactly the thing. It's like, oh, I picture a house and the front room will have these objects. The king, like in each card is an item in the room. So if I come in the living room, there might not be the couch in this room. It might be in the other bedroom.
I had to do more of that because my memory is bad. And I read that you're more likely to get Alzheimer's if you're not like working your memory constantly.
Yeah.
Mental elasticity is important.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about some events that are happening currently in the news. Hawaii is going off right now. We don't have a whole lot to say other than that the...
it's a full-on eruption.
Cool-looking lava flow that we were talking about last week has turned into ash shooting into the sky. 30,000 feet high is how high the like ash column is going, which is really high. Mount St. Helens went 80,000 feet. That's the largest volcanic eruption in the history of the United States. But that like altered the temperature, and the one in Iceland in 2010, they think altered the temperature by a couple degrees, like for the next couple of years, because it shot so much matter into the atmosphere that there was just
for
more
years.
Yeah. Yeah. For there was just more cloud cover. So we don't know how this necessarily compares to those, but winter is coming. Prepare.
Last time I checked, well, on the news this morning, they were saying how they were calling like a catastrophic steam event, basically where the lava lake inside the volcano is sinking and eventually will reach this like level of water, like groundwater basically. And then that interaction, the temperatures will just, you know, collide, create a bunch of steam and shoot up so many, they're saying all kinds of rubble and like boulders. They're saying some like up to the size of refrigerators or small cars at 120 miles an hour, which is a lot. But luckily that most of the area around Kilauea is not really like a place where people live. It's not inhabitable. So there isn't too great a risk of any kind of injury, but still, man.
Science is crazy.
Earth is tripping.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't know why.
But that is all just a natural occurrence. There's no, man, I feel dumb asking this question.
No one triggered the earthquake.
Yeah. No, it wasn't Oklahoma where they've just been like
fracking
and fracking and causing finally, all these earthquakes.
Yeah.
Not that I think this volcano has been going off for years now.
Yeah.
And like Hawaii has been an active volcano, I think, for like its entire existence.
Forever.
It's just like moving eastward essentially. But yeah, that brings up just another interesting thing I recently learned is that Earth has an underground ocean that is three times the amount of water that is on the surface of the planet.
Are you following that Uber Facts Twitter account or something?
Nah.
What is that? There's a fucking ocean part two?
Yeah, there's just water. There's a ton of water down by the core.
What? How is it?
I don't remember that. In the movie The Core, I don't think they ever hit that part.
Yeah, no, they must have missed it. Yeah. They missed that movie was
when DJ Qualls was drinking all that Mountain Dew.
But wait, why? How is it still water? Wouldn't it be not in liquid water form if it's that hot?
Look, I'm not on trial here.
Yeah, look, we're not scientists, man. We're second-rate podcasters.
Honestly, most of what I know about the Earth's core is from that movie.
The movie The Core.
The Core.
Well, Delroy Lindo's feet melt off when he's trying to. I think it's Delroy Lindo, right?
Yeah.
You guys think I'm reading a news article. I'm just watching
the
core
trailer. You're like, damn, it's fucking up everything.
Yeah.
Damn, they got to set off a nuclear warhead in the core to start it back up.
sounds right.
Yeah, makes sense.
Checks out.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk a little politics, Miles. What's
a little
going
bit.
On?
A wee bit. Nah, maybe a lot of bit. We have so much shit we talk about and kick the outrage machine into high gear on a daily basis. That it's important to also talk about things that are being done that are trying to achieve some kind of level of equality in this country. Specifically, Sherrod Brown was at this CAP Ideas conference, which is the Center for American Progress. They have like this annual conference. And when he spoke on a panel, and afterwards on Twitter, he kind of like let people know some tax policies that he felt like we should probably consider when we overhaul our tax system, unlike the massive corporate giveaway we had back in December, something that will actually help American working people. And a lot of the ideas are, I mean, just tell me if this sounds reasonable to you, okay? Well, the first one is the Patriot Employers Tax Credit. Now, that is a credit that rewards employers who commit to keeping jobs in the United States, pay workers well, and encourage them to create more good-paying jobs. And when we say they pay them well, we mean like a living wage, actual benefits like healthcare, retirement, things like that. And those are the countries that deserve a tax credit that literally actually keep their jobs in the United States, as opposed to like, yeah, headquarter here, and then you can hide your money elsewhere. Yeah.
I mean,
that seems fine.
Anything with the word patriot in it, I think, is good for the American people.
I mean, that's Sherrod Brown's genius, baby.
It is.
Then the other one, which he also, good buzzwords here, the corporate freeloader fee. Now, a lot of companies like McDonald's, Walmart, they be paying people so little money that they actually themselves have to apply for benefits, for welfare benefits, because they're not actually paid enough by their employer and they don't offer benefits. So what this does is requires companies that pay their workers so little that they actually have to they have to reimburse the taxpayer for underpaying these people. So it's just kind of like, okay, you want to underpay these people? Well, this is the tax you have to pay because that'll help offset the fact that these people have to actually be on benefits. I mean, I don't see why fucking McDonald's or Walmart needs more of a handout.
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
Seems fine. Okay. And again, these are just his ideas. Hopefully he will introduce these pieces of legislation, which will probably not get fully voted on.
That one's actually well-named. Not that I'm only listening to the title and completely tuning everything else out. But
you're like, the Freddie Freeloader fee?
Yeah.
The corporate freeloader fee I like because calling corporations freeloaders is very, I don't know, it's like something that I can get behind and that like sticks in your memory.
Because they're fucking vampires. They're sucking the country dry. And finally, he has the Working Families Tax Relief Act, and I'm going to quote him here, which would expand access for working people to the Earned Income Tax Credit and Child Tax Credit. And now that's because a lot of people get an increase in pay and they might be pushed into a higher tax bracket.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And then they're like suddenly like, well, that effectively limits the amount of money I have to support my family and things like that. So this is just about creating eligibility for those benefits. These all sound great. And these ideas and these kinds of legislation is really necessary when you take into account the midterms and the kind of messaging that works and also what the current state is of people's financial situations in this country. So the United Way just released a study that shows that more than 40% of the households in the United States cannot pay the basics of a middle-class lifestyle, which they define as being able to pay your rent, transportation, childcare, and a cell phone. Yeah. That's like the minimum. Now, they're just showing that, you know, clearly that there's this group of families that they call ALICE families, which are basically in between poverty and the middle class. And ALICE stands for Asset Limited, Income Constrained Employed. And those are households who are working, but they earn just very little. Like, those are many people that we see who have hourly income who are just kind of, there isn't much social upward mobility when you are in a situation like this. And these are the kinds of things that really need to be addressed. These are the kinds of things that affect all people, no matter what party you're in. Yeah. That's just a quality of life thing.
Yeah. We talked on a past episode about how America, when you compare it to other Western countries, we tend to think of ourselves as the land of opportunity, but we actually have far less social mobility than countries like Canada has twice as much social mobility than the average American. So, you know, a lot of these institutions have come in and made it harder for people to get out of, you know, whatever class strata they're at.
Right.
And we tend to think of ourselves as like a classless society.
That's crazy.
That is incorrect.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm half Swedish and my family in Sweden is truly living in a classless society. Not Sweden proper, but they're in this island called Åland, technically belongs to Finland. But there, I mean, you truly see what it means to have a generally equal class. There aren't really many wealthy people. There's one rich guy. He has three cars, and everyone knows him when he drives around.
Peter the rich guy.
Peter the rich guy. I don't remember his name. It's like Jan or something. But he gets targeted by the traffic cops because it's scaled there. So if you get a ticket, it's based on your income.
Right, right.
So when he pays a ticket, it can be like $7,000.
There you go.
That's justice. That's where we should be today.
Things need to be scalable and relative to your income because with one kind of legal problem, someone can completely wipe out their finances or even sadly here, medical
thing can happen. That's a big one.
And you're completely bankrupted.
Now, it also makes total sense to me that you would just scale laws that have financial consequences to how much, because otherwise it's not going to hurt them.
Exactly.
Like they can just speed wherever the fuck they want.
As you can see in Beverly Hills.
That's always the land of no traffic laws, you mean?
Exactly.
Well, I drive through Beverly Hills every day to get here.
Boy, when I used to work around there, I would pray I would get hit by a car on a crosswalk because the way people just make right turns into a crosswalk was next level.
They don't care.
Can't be touched.
All the liberal stereotypes that you hear about people in California are wrong, except Beverly Hills is just full of the worst people in the world.
Truly the worst.
Now, the other thing I want to bring up, since we're on the idea of income inequality, and we've been talking about the poor people's movement and things like that, of really trying to really get people to understand sort of what's at stake for us as American people who are just trying to work to try and achieve some kind of dignified life. Keith Ellison from Minnesota, he released a study also that found that CEOs in the United States on average are paid 339 times more than their workers. So, for example, at 188 out of the 225 companies that they analyzed, a single CEO's salary could be used to pay more than 100 workers. Mm-hmm. And they also found that at 219 of the 225 companies, an average employee would need to work for more than 45 years to make what their CEO makes in 1 year. So this is what is at stake. This is the situation that we are really ignoring in exchange for, you know, immigrant boogie people and things like that. These are the kinds of issues that I feel like, you know, when everyone's talking about how do we get some of these independents to get on board? Talk this shit. This is
talk about income inequality.
This is really affects you no matter what. And it's really something that needs to be addressed.
And this is the stuff that has changed. Like in 1950, a CEO to worker ratio was 20 to 1. 1980, 42 to 1. 2000, 120 to 1. And now, yeah, it's insane. It's like
I don't understand why we haven't done a better job of making our corporate overlords the enemy.
Well, because they sponsor Congress.
Right. Yeah, but even just as like citizens and as journalists and the media.
Because we have a corporate-sponsored journalism.
That's why we need the hard-hitting journalism.
That's why y'all come to the Daily Zeitgeist and talk that shit.
Exactly.
But really, though,
but guys, really, you know, even when you're listening, these are the kinds of things that if you get stuck in partisan debates about dumb shit, shift the focus to this kind of thing. Because everybody knows somebody who's, whether you are listening yourself and you are struggling to make ends meet, or you have yourself been there and been fortunate enough to get out of a situation like that. These are real issues. These are the things that, you know, think about how unhappy you are when you don't have shit and you feel like you are completely disregarded.
Yeah.
These are the kinds of things that we just got to address. Right. Come on, people.
I don't understand how there's not more support for socialized healthcare. Like, doesn't everyone have cancer now?
Well, that's why, you know, we're seeing now more and more people who are even left of center or center left for Democrats. There's a lot of enthusiasm for candidates like this who are being like, we need Medicare for all.
Yeah.
And that's funny because before when you just hated Obama and you needed something to, a lightning rod of Obamacare to hate him over, think about how many people now who have benefited from that and like, whoa, don't take my fucking Obamacare.
Oh, yeah, I'm on Obamacare.
Yeah, because now you realize, wait, this is a better system. I don't want to feel like, I'm sure for you in Sweden, I have family in Japan, when the whole Obamacare discussion was going on, telling somebody that someone could go bankrupt from a medical bill was like a total head scratcher.
Oh, right. Yeah.
They're like, what do you mean?
You don't.
They're like, someone needed treatment for their cancer or they had a pre-existing condition that kept them from getting the full benefits or whatever. And they slowly lose their money. They have to drain their finances, sell their homes, et cetera. And everyone's like, what? That doesn't make sense.
And what's crazy is like you can still have a private sector in medicine.
Right.
You just also have a public option.
Right. Right. You just do it. So look, bro, at the bare minimum, you can get your leg looked at. You
know what I mean?
You can get this looked at. If you want to turn up a little bit and go to a really fancy expert, then there's a market for that too.
Yeah.
But the insurance companies are incredibly wealthy and incredibly influential. And, you know, they're going to fight this every step of the way. Mm-hmm. And the only way that Obamacare got done was by letting people who were former health insurance industry people, like basically write the laws.
Right.
So it's still a fucking mess here in these United States. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back. And so we used to do a thing called Trump Free Thursdays, but there's just too much Trump stuff to ignore for a whole day. But so we're going to try and do like a Trump 5 minutes here and just get through some updates in the world. Oh, Trump. One of them.
Impossible due to a tight five of Trump. He can't even tight do five. A tight five.
Trump calls Hannity at the end of the day. That's something we have failed to mention up to this point. But that broke in the past week. That's who he unwinds with at the end of the day instead of his, you know, Reagan head Nancy, George H.W. Bush head Barbara. And Donald has Sean.
I really like framing it like that.
Yeah.
You know, he's
like
lonely.
A wife, like a relation, functioning marriage.
He has no functioning personal relationship. So he calls the next best thing Fox News commentator.
Who knows what he's telling this man?
You know?
And like what kind of sensitive shit he's even telling him or just generally, it just really, it half makes me laugh because I'm like, you're not going to believe it, Sean. Peter Navarro and Larry Kudlow were fighting about tariffs with China. I don't even know.
Tell me about it, babe.
Yeah. What's going on? Wait, which one is Peter?
You know they call
I told
each other,
you
babe.
First. Gary Cohn didn't like, or do you even listen to me, Sean? Like,
but he must be turning down scoops like hand over fist, just like he gets, like, Trump
yeah, right.
does not filter for anyone.
Right, right.
He's definitely, like, that's the reason he hasn't had a press conference in 400 days. He can't be controlled. He calls a guy who's supposed to be a journalist every night to just unwind.
Right.
And that dude must just be like, yeah, I mean, that would probably win me like a Pulitzer.
Right.
But like he's turning it down because he's not a journalist. He's just
one
of the homies.
Yeah, just huddle up and be like, well, how do you want me to spin that? Okay, got it.
Yeah, right. He knows his brand
is
safe.
I would love though if Trump's also just really confiding him, telling lies like, honestly, we haven't even been talking to North Korea. Just been saying that. Oh, God. And it's really going to come down soon. Oh boy. But
I can't imagine him venting an insecurity.
I have to because I love seeing.
I know there's insecurity, but I think
it's just so internalized and just turns into.
He takes it out by doing, and I don't want to kink shame, but I shudder to think what his kinks are.
I think it's just
peepee,
spanking
peepee
people
and spanking.
With magazines
yeah,
that he's on the cover
of. That's what we know.
Or that his daughter is on the cover with. Just speaking of his insecurity real quick, Miles, you were playing a clip earlier. This is not on the doc, but you were playing a clip earlier of Pete Davidson from SNL talking about the time that Trump came and hosted. And it's just, you guys got to watch it because you might have seen the part where he talks about how Trump can't read.
Like, or his theory that Trump is illiterate.
Well, he saw him like sounding words out and not being able to read.
But we know
script.
He can read because he does jazz and he doesn't do jazz. You can't read a teleprompter on what the fucking pictures show up. And he's put his word association is that strong where he's like the blah, like just photos. I
think he can read. He just doesn't read books ever.
Yeah. But there's also a story about how he.
I like that we just had to do. He can read.
Yeah, we have to read that.
I actually had to defend the fact that I think he is literate.
I think he probably suffers from undiagnosed dyslexia, and he's just always been too proud to admit that. He has a lot of the hallmarks of somebody who had to struggle with a learning disability and like figure out ways around the standard. That's in my upcoming book. Trump's, I don't know.
My upcoming book, I Can't Read Good. Watch the Pete Davidson clip because he's on Peter Rosenberg's show from Hot 97, but he's talking about when he was on SNL and he describes this thing where basically he claims that Donald Trump took a fake phone call to announce to the room that his book went number one.
Yeah.
And
oh my God.
You'll watch it. He's just kind of like, and it went down like he just went like this, like, or didn't even ring. He just goes, hello? Oh my God, that's great. Okay, fantastic. My book's number one, guys. And just hung up and I was like, bro, there's not even time for you to fucking have an exchange of words.
Right, right.
Anyway, we'll link to that in the notes.
So the FBI has revealed some of the details from Operation Crossfire Hurricane, which is what they called the investigation into Russian meddling in the 2016 election and possible collusion with the Trump campaign. Crossfire Hurricane is from a Rolling Stones lyric.
Jumping Jack Flash.
Just such a desperately whack baby boomer bullshit name. Like, hey, Rolling Stones, get it? Go fuck yourselves, the FBI.
You read it the way it's meant to be read.
Right. Crossfire Hurricane.
Yeah.
All right, Mick.
So, I don't know. After reading the New York Times account, the impression I got was that the FBI was exceedingly fair to the Trump campaign, like to a fault, and unfair to the Clinton campaign, based basically entirely on Comey's belief that Clinton would win and Trump would lose. There was that interview where he talked about how maybe his decision-making was influenced by his belief that Clinton was going to win, and he didn't want her presidency overshadowed by the belief that the FBI was, out here doing her favors.
By being honest?
Yeah. It's the whole, the same. We've talked about how the liberal media has been going out of their way to cover the conservative point of view. It's that on steroids. They completely gave away the power to conservatives by basically triangulating with a point of view that just wasn't really very reasonable
mm-hmm.
out of a desire to appear even-handed.
The thing also in the article is like they kind of reference the fact that back in the build-up to Election Day, remember they put out an article where the headline was "Investigating Donald Trump, FBI sees no clear link to Russia."
That's so crazy.
The other thing that I missed when I first read the New York Times article, but Wonkette and other people were quick to point out that this was essentially the New York Times being like, "Oh yeah, and because the FBI told us that, told us not to emphasize this." We released an article where the headline essentially absolved the Trump campaign.
New York Times, overrated.
Right. That's what you were prescient.
Right. Well, yeah. Although they then later on, like in that article where it says, oh, there's no Rush connection, they do actually mention that there is an investigation, but it's so deep in the article.
Right. They say we waited until the New York Times article was informed by this FBI, you know, investigation and what they were hearing from the FBI. And therefore, we waited until like the 11th paragraph to talk about these like huge bombshells that were dropping.
But does any of this add up to any sort of action against Trump? I mean, at this point, I feel so cynical and tired, and like he's gonna, you know, go out this term the same as he's been in his deep delusion and narcissism.
Well, I mean, I think this article is more about like the early days of this investigation, more for like what sort of potential consequences there are for the president. Because let's be real, there aren't really going to be many, as far as I can tell right now. I mean, yes, sure, there are many things that we can look at and go, oh, yes, objectively, that this law was broken or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't try and get too in the weeds with whether how I'm going to be, you know, relieved of this hell of the president, aside from, you know, what we can do to mobilize sort of blocks of voters to actually exercise
elections.
I think it's useful from the standpoint of recognizing how big a problem it is that the New York Times and the FBI are doing this thing where, out of even-handedness, they are like doing what the conservatives want them to do and just not reporting this thing that, had they reported it as much as they reported the Clinton email quote scandal.
Oh boy. Thanks,
like,
Maggie.
So the article, like Miles was saying, came out like a few days before the election that absolved the Trump campaign. If they had just put front and center the fact that
there is an investigation.
Yeah.
Which is true and was in the article.
Yeah. Investigation ongoing. That's a good enough title. And then just right next to it, say another title, How to Do Laundry, which is a real New York Times headline.
Right.
Is it?
Why
it
is this making me laugh and cry?
Yeah.
Is this avocado making me smarter?
That's perfect. That's what it is.
You won't believe when you get to the end of this article about the Trump campaign, this woman cried.
Right. Oh, my God.
Find out why. All right, we have to move on to some more important news. There is devastating royal wedding news, you guys.
What?
Oh, no.
Meghan Markle's father will not be attending to walk her down the aisle.
No.
Then it's not a wedding.
That's not the latest news, I thought.
If the man doesn't give the woman away, it's not a wedding.
I thought he was coming.
It was back and forth, but she has officially released a statement saying that he will not be attending. So basically the way this went down is that he was having like staged TMZ photo shoots.
Yeah.
One of the photographs that was taken during these staged photo shoots was one that we had talked about on a past episode of Bloid Watch. Because it has him in a Starbucks reading a book called England.
Yeah.
And it's just him being like, I'm studying up on England.
Right.
And then he also had some stage pictures of him like trying to get in shape for the wedding. And it's really like kind of sad and almost sweet that he's like trying to make it seem like he is getting ready for the wedding.
Or is he getting a check from TMZ, though, too?
Well, he's getting a check, but they're going to take the pictures anyway.
Right.
But if there's one thing we learn about American people, if someone is suddenly ascending into a place of power, the people around you will try and make money off of you.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think that's anything. But with the book, though, is funny to me because when we even pointed out, we're like, yo, that book is like a just a big oversized seemingly picture book.
Yeah,
with,
there's
like,
no way he bought that.
But
it's
then you realize,
the
shit had to play to camera.
Right.
Like, he's
exactly.
like, is it reading on camera? No.
Yeah.
Get
no.
a bigger one.
It was essentially a coffee table picture book of England pictures.
Right.
It could be worse. It could be so much. He could like shit talking her for money from TMZ.
No, exactly. And his other daughter was doing that.
Exactly.
Megan's half sister. So all of this stressed him out. Quite a bit. He's a larger gentleman and ended up having open heart surgery fairly recently or heart surgery fairly recently. And
did they say that's due to like the just stress of him?
I mean, no, you can't really say what it's due to. But
let's wildly speculate. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely do.
Congratulations.
And
you
also
played yourself.
Due to a broken heart.
Oh, there we go. Boom. Yeah. Got to go get it fixed.
I read a New York Times headline about that. That was...
broken heart?
Yeah. No.
Try this. Open heart surgery.
Yeah. Also, avocado toast.
All right.
Is it going to be that... Well, her mom will then now walk her down the aisle, right? Is
I guess.
That the deal?
Because
I feel like when the speculation was so crazy over the weekend, like, will he, won't he, will he, won't he? If not, the mother will do it.
Or like an uncle.
Yeah.
I've seen done. But also, Meghan Markle is the people's princess. I'm rooting for her.
I
love that she's all over the news.
Hell yeah.
Ever since I was a child, I've been dreaming of being a princess. And
really?
And instead, you're with Garlic Butt.
Old Garlic Butt.
You know what? He has his problems. And when he came on this podcast, he really dragged me through the mud and claimed that he made me.
He's the motor running this operation.
He claimed credit for my success in comedy and entertainment. But
interesting.
I'm going to take the high ground and I'm going to say Edgar's a good guy deep down.
Wow.
He has his flaws. He has a pair of shorts. Have I talked?
Oh, we know about
you
the
know
cum
about
shorts.
Him, the cum shorts.
We haven't talked about it on the Daily Zeitgeist.
We haven't?
Though. I don't think so.
Oh. No, we did. Oh,
yes,
we did.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think Jack just blocked it out of his mind.
Yeah.
You see how his face literally had a visceral reaction.
I know.
To the work.
And people actually, because I tell that in my stand up set, people do come up to me and say, I'm so sorry. And I'm like, oh, my God. I feel bad about the narrative I'm telling, but it's true.
I like how messy we get on this show.
Yeah, but you know, he's a good guy.
Yeah, he's
so
a
let
good
that
guy.
Be my response. I don't need to lower myself to drag
through the mud. Look at you.
Sorry, Edgar. I'm just a better person.
And just so people know, he jerks off into a pair of shorts.
Pair of shorts.
Right.
So really for the record.
The same pair of shorts.
That's who we're dealing with.
Yeah.
And
always. Without cleaning them.
Yeah.
Oh boy. And
just
ugh,
they stand up on the ground. So So I don't know. This is going to be interesting. The royal wedding. Anybody going to stay up for it?
Fuck no.
I mean,
I'll watch the highlights.
Yeah, I'll watch the highlights, and when I watch those highlights, I will vicariously live through her.
Yeah.
So do you think? I'm always curious, like, because when we were looking on Google Trends, when the American interest, search interest on Google spiked when the engagement was announced, and for like a week, it was like insane. Then it severely dropped off and has not spiked ever since.
She hasn't done anything surprising.
Well, but no, but just in general, the amount of like the search traffic around this wedding has been very low amongst Americans, at least according to Google. That's why I'm like, I'm trying to line up where people's actual enthusiasm is for this, or if just kind of like our sort of like post-colonial
thing. I have
thing,
an answer
like,
to that.
Yes, please.
I
That's
think,
why I ask.
I think when we found out about the engagement, we thought, oh, wow, finally someone who's going to be like a little less rehearsed and less prim and proper than
Princess Diana.
No, not Diana. What's her? Diana. She's truly before my time. When I look at her, I'm like, she seems kind of boring. Oh, my God.
Oh,
no
my
offense.
Goodness.
I shouldn't say that. But
she
what?
Was like a punk rocker for like the 80s.
Yeah.
They were like, who is this devil?
Wow. Yeah. School teacher. And also that marriage seemed like it was kind of arranged. But what's her name?
Kate Wills?
I truly do forget her name. She's that boring.
Yes.
She's so vanilla.
Her
she
last
was,
name is Middleton.
Yeah.
Yeah, like she was already upper class.
Middleton.
Ugh.
She's just like
it was all about Pippa anyway.
Truly,
everybody's checking
exactly.
for Pippa.
Vanillison Middleton.
Pippa,
it's just
so
like, come
vanilla.
On.
But yeah. with so, Meghan yeah. Markle, it was like, oh, finally, we're going to get someone cool and exciting. As exciting as Prince Harry, because he's a pretty cool dude, too.
I know,
too.
He's got red hair.
Yeah, he was a playboy.
Wow, he's got red hair. He was
And
helicopter
the fact
pilot,
that,
I think.
Yeah, she's like, isn't like from upper class parents. That was also exciting.
She's
but
from
then,
the valley, right?
Yeah,
oh,
I think so.
Yeah. But what is disappointing is she is been, I mean, and she's perfect. She's great. She's so sweet, seemingly.
Get it out.
She's been co-opted into the British royalty machine where no one is ever allowed to step out of line and no one is ever allowed to be surprising. And the interviews, unfortunately, between them, you can tell there's so much that they're like not supposed to say.
Well, that's the difference.
That it's a bummer. It's boring. I want juicy gossip in my
Yeah, well, Kensington
royalty
does not like that shit. Yeah. That's why they were like livid about the dad stuff, because they're like, yo, we already have to deal with the like tabloids out here.
Yeah,
we don't want
TMZ you here.
TMZ shit.
Yeah. One of our writers, Sam Rudman, saying that at people like royal watchers, which is like an entire industry of media in England, are upset with the royal family for not having sent a tender to like somebody to tend to her father. Like they think that this like all could have been avoided if like a royal
To mind him?
Yeah,
like a minder?
Basically a minder, right. Yes.
Wow. Although
which would have been a great movie.
Adult PR babysitter, yeah.
That's a funny idea. If no one's copywriting it, I'll
right.
scoop
I
know. It
up.
We
got so many elevator pitches. All right, now picture
it's
this.
Very like King Ralph.
Yeah. You know? It's a fucking it's kind of a scumbag dad who had like a few kids and his one of his daughters. Suddenly, he's back in her life because she's getting married to a prince.
So they send Kevin Hart.
Yeah. With a British accent?
With a British accent. He right. can do it, yeah.
Yeah. No, super producer Anna Hosni, I would just give him some accent tips.
Yeah.
Accent lessons.
And wait, so who would that be? If Kevin Hart is the minder, then who would play Meghan Markle's dad? What's that comp? Is it The Rock?
No. Gleason.
He can't be a schlub.
What's his name? Gleason.
Brendan Gleason?
Yeah, Brendan Gleason.
Wait, so Brendan Gleason, who is actually from the UK, you would have him... be
the American dad.
Gleason Irish. I don't want to. I'm not trying to say Ireland is part of the UK. He's Irish. That you would have him play the American father, and then have Kevin Hart from Philadelphia play the royal minder.
What about John Goodman? I could see him
John
be
Goodman.
The dad.
John Goodman.
Oh hell no! If super producer Anna Hosni just signed me a note. John Voight.
Yeah, get out of here.
No,
I'm serious.
No.
Out.
Although he delivers one of the greatest monologues in Anaconda. Snakes don't bite. Oh, they don't. Anacondas are the perfect killing machine. Anyway, I could do that all day.
Anna, it's been a joy having you.
It's been a joy being here.
Where can people find you?
You can find me at Bad Comics with an X by Anna with two N's. I have to specify that because if I don't, you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on Instagram with my comic, but also on Twitter. Look, Edgar and I have a Twitter feud, so please come out with your support. I need it. It's really important to me.
I think most people are on your side.
I do too.
Sadly.
But yeah. Also, if I ever want to be on Culture Kings again, I need all the support I could get because they feel threatened by me.
Oh, for sure.
Someone coming to the kingdom. Yeah.
Yeah. I can feel it.
It's not called Culture Queens.
Yeah.
Exactly. I heard Jackie say that the other day.
No.
No, you did, Jackie. I'm checking for you. You said it. I know now.
Miles, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray, and possibly just looking on YouTube for more videos on how to put in a new valve for my plumbing so I can have an ice maker.
Yeah. But shout out to the
people.
Came for you,
yo,
right?
Shout out to the people on Twitter. I'm literally gonna hit some of y'all up who were like, "Yo, I'm a plumber. What you need?"
What?
Because I might need you to FaceTime with me as I put this thing in. I'm so not a fucking handy person
at
all.
We have such cool fans though. We have like
everything.
Plumbers, we got like dudes,
painters,
who are just like
artists.
Cutting up meat, like
yeah.
just like bad motherfuckers.
Oh yeah, shout out to
that
American Butcher. Yo,
American Butcher
has a lit Instagram account.
Oh, I'm gonna follow.
Also,
I'm a vegetarian and I'm
yo,
gonna follow that.
Andorran Gambler, you know what I mean, the homie who's making the wild water pipes for us, you know what I mean, like this.
Oh right,
the Zeit Gang is out here. Also, you know, that's what we need to do. Eventually we'll create a document. The Zeit Gang will be like a real community of like artisans.
We gotta have like a con. Zeit Gang con. Zeit con.
Like con film festival?
No. Oh. No, like Cannes festival. I was told. I was pronouncing it that way. And apparently that is embarrassing.
Con. James Con.
How do you say Cannes?
Cannes.
Cannes.
Hey, yeah. Did you guys hear about that new movie from Cannes?
Cannes?
All right. You can follow me at @Jack_O'Brien on Twitter. You can follow us at Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes. We link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as the song that we ride out on, which Miles...
Today we're going to do Brother Reed, Crushed by a Truck, from their album The Illustrated Guide to 9 to 5. Just a dope I don't know. I like Brother Reed. The production is cool. It's not your typical. I mean, it is kind of like old sample-based hip-hop. But anyway, just enjoy this. This is Crushed by a Truck by
Crushed
Brother Reed.
Crushed by a Truck?
Yeah.
Is that like a reference to the
something that happened
like
to them?
No, I don't even know. I don't even know. Guys,
very,
I don't know.
Very specific. All right. We're going to ride out on that. We will be back tomorrow because it is a daily podcast. Talk to you guys then. Bye.
Special pen to write a basement hymn that I can play for my unfamous friends. To throw the party in the same space we taped it in, while they screaming words off the demo tape we gave to them. So just take it in, take a minute if you need a second longer for the song to seep into your pores. We can accommodate your problem, I promise, no problem. Beat is so monstrous and the reader's so conscious. Fuck that shit is massive cause I'm unconscious. Like I'm shooting bombers from beyond the arc and stomping on your conscience. So when the force of artists launches, you contemplate the trouble sifting through the rubble. Like I thought this was a bomb threat. Jael Poncha spit at God's honest. Heard he was a sconce between the marijuanas and the captive organs, letting rap destroy him. When he passes back, he get his whole brain blown. So the saying goes, wearing the same clothes to the specs of my brother Reed on 12-step recovery from subtlety. So fuck a shark, this up in your discovery. Y'all see techniques, kill see cutlery. I peep this music in a tight dress, blue as shit. The way she move her hips make me wanna be a Hoover Crip. I'm tryna say I wanna bang, I wanna fuck her, man. I wanna cut her like these punks can't do to the mustard. Why must I bust? I don't know why the people I trust. Goddamn, it was just my luck. I got dressed up for this party and got crushed by a truck. Why must I bust? I don't know why the people I trust. Goddamn, it was just our luck. I got dressed up for this party and got crushed by a truck. Let me breathe, let this oxygen blend with me. Cause you can listen to Jimmy, but y'all can't hear Jimmy. It's more life to learn, plus he like a mic to burn. He do it right like Voodoo Child's Light Return. Sort of cool, sort of phase, he be the head trip mainly. He be getting loose up in the sky with that electric lady. More than a war gun, he storm when the war come. They like I saw him last year on tour, it was awesome. Knuckleheads buckle, get your chores done. Claiming that your clique was star-studded, they all sons. Nice off of L, right sort of well. They used to be on 4 tracks, now we on 12s. I hear a lot of cats bitching how they don't got a pot to make water or a fucking hat to shit in, but I'm hungry. Only keep my people among me. I see through the others, y'all some peepholes, dummy. And everybody wonders how I speak so grungy when these trees so green and this beat so lovely. The sort of brilliant Atwater villain. And he push limits like Richard Gere push on pretty women. Most magnificent trend killer. I'm at the wake meeting of parents, cause raps ain't never been stiller. Why must I bust? I don't know why the people I trust. Goddamn, it was just my luck. I got dressed up for this party and got crushed by a truck. Why must I bust? I don't know why the people I trust. Goddamn, it was just our luck. I got dressed up for this party and got crushed by a truck.